So Anton, as the executive director, you are actively involved in carrying out day-to-day administration. You communicate with governments, diplomats, NGOs, and other actors in order to ensure the promotion of the current project's International Council in Support of Ukraine. Can you please discuss some of the most rewarding and challenging aspects associated with the work that you do?
I think the work that we're doing at the International Council is it's a very rewarding work for me. It's also quite challenging because you have to make sure that you understand the context. You understand what a given NGO is doing and how they can help, how to build those bridges, how to ensure that partnerships can be established with other organizations. With the diplomatic corps, it's a very interesting work, outreaching to various missions in Ottawa and in Toronto, and educating them about what's going on. Most of them are well worse than what's going on, but it never hurts to have this additional discussion or a conversation and give them a little bit more of a perspective. We always invite diplomats and politicians to attend our events to make sure that if a Ukrainian politician comes to Canada, he has a full access to the media and to diplomats and politicians so he or she can carry the message, whether it's Mustafa Jamilev talking about the persecution of Crimean Tatars in Crimea or the help that internally displaced people from Crimea require. Or whether it's the Speaker of Ukrainian Parliament, Andriy Paroby, whom we brought to Ottawa and Toronto in February this year, who was talking about the judicial reform and the importance of supporting Ukraine in its current fight with Russia in the Donbass. I think it's a perfect example of how an international NGO can build those bridges, can outreach, find this common ground with others, promote its own cause, as well as learn about other different causes and find the common solution, the common understanding of how we're better off together, we're better off working towards the good and benefit of our communities or our societies.
Anton, with your expertise and your knowledge about the ongoing issues in Ukraine and the crisis as a result of Russia's interrogation and as a result of President Putin, you know, aggressing towards Ukraine, what needs to happen next in order to protect civilization, in order to protect the people of Ukraine? I want to mention that not too long ago, when I attended the Toronto International Film Festival, I had an opportunity to meet and to speak with the filmmaker of Winter on Fire, Ukraine's Fight for Freedom. I met with Evgeny Agnevsky, and he discussed the struggles that Ukrainian people are currently facing. The people of Ukraine have gone through so much, and it's an ongoing struggle. And ultimately, I encourage everyone to understand the struggles that the people are facing. And I think that Winter on Fire, Ukraine's Fight for Freedom, is one of those films that shows the challenges that the people are currently going through. I encourage everyone to see this film because it is heartbreaking. It really is heartbreaking to see the people who believed that their country would become a part of the European Union, which was what was promised to them, to then be stripped of that possibility, and then to be brutalized, and to be scrutinized, and to be attacked for wanting their country to be a part of the European Union. So with all of these challenges everywhere, and with Russia's interrogation and intervention in Ukraine, what can the people do? What needs to happen next in order to help Ukraine, and in order to ensure that Ukraine does become a member of the European Union, and in order to ensure that Ukraine does become a member of NATO?
Thank you for this question. I think it's very important for listeners to hear the answer to this question. I will be voicing my opinion to that question because every politician that I speak to, they have their own view of how the conflict should be resolved. And I don't think there is one universal answer to all the problems that Ukraine is currently facing. But to me, the biggest challenge right now is the fact that we have allowed Russia to behave in a barbaric way that has been prohibited by all international laws, international treaties that were signed following the end of World War II. And Russia is still not paying the price for it. We have seen sanctions that were implemented as a result of the annexation of Crimea. We have seen additional sanctions imposed as a result of their aggressive behavior in eastern Ukraine. Ukraine has signed a Minsk deal with Russia, or agreed to participate, rather, in the Minsk process. But what we see right now is that Russia has not changed its behavior. Crimea is still occupied and annexed. People's human rights are being disrespected. People are being abducted. People are being killed, tortured. They're being imprisoned for their views, for their pro-Ukrainian, pro-democracy views. People in the Donbas are dying every day. There was a certain period of time when there were no direct aggression between the so-called rebels, separatists, or terrorists, as I call them, from Russia, and the Ukrainian armed forces. But right now, the fight has intensified in the last couple of months. And what does it tell us? It tells us that Putin is sending a message to the international community that he's ready to fight. He's ready to go further. He's not going to back out. He's not going to let it go. So I think that we should read this message that he's sending, and we should act accordingly. We need to impose tougher sanctions on Russia. Russia has to pay the price for what it's doing in eastern Ukraine and Crimea. This is crucial. The sanctions were imposed with one clear intention, and the intention was for Russia to reverse its behavior. And we see that it's not happening. So what does it tell me? It tells me that the sanctions are not significant enough. This situation in Ukraine is very dangerous for many reasons. And we need to remember that any sort of reform that the United States and the European Union is waiting for Ukraine to implement, in my view, will not be as successful as if those reforms were implemented during peaceful time. On the one hand side, there are a few narratives. One of them is Ukraine needs to be successful in order to win this war. The other narrative is we need to make sure that Ukraine's borders are secure, all the territories are returned back to Ukraine, and only then can Ukraine become the process of integrating itself further with the European Union. I tend to believe that security is the priority for Ukraine. I think that without integrating the Donbas back into Ukraine, without beginning a formal process of returning Crimea back to Ukraine, we cannot be talking about effective reforms. Now, Ukraine got a new government just 2 months ago, and their progress has been significant to date. There were multiple reforms that were implemented, and there was a big business forum in Toronto a couple of days ago where the government officials from Ukraine discussed its progress. But I ask myself, is this enough? Is this it? Will this ensure that Ukraine becomes a peaceful state? Probably not. I think that in this regard, we need all the help that we can get from the international community to help Ukraine restore its territorial integrity, to hold Russia to account, to make sure that Russia pays the price economically and legally. But so far, the situation is such that we're seeing the United States and European Union pressuring Ukraine to reform itself. Ukraine is trying to perform certain reforms, to implement certain reforms, but we're not seeing much progress. We're not seeing any prospects of Donbas returning back to Ukraine anytime soon. We're not seeing any prospects of Crimea returning to Ukraine soon. So I think that security is a top priority for Ukraine right now, and it will be until full territorial integrity of Ukraine is ensured.